I'd like to call the meeting to order. Good evening, everybody. This is the regular Monday, May 20th, 2024 Town Council meeting for the town of Curry Beach. Commissioner Ellen, if you would, give us a pledge, and we'll stand for the invocation, and we'll stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Dear Lord, give us insight to lead with integrity, that our decisions may reflect what is right and good. Keep us from short-sightedness and pettiness. Help us to make decisions that are for the good of all, and guard us from blind self-interest. Dear Lord, grant that we use the humility to always seek your will in all that we do and say. All the glory be to you, loving God, now and always. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next item on our agenda is the approval of our consent agenda. Anybody have any questions or concerns? I'll entertain a motion.
Make a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented.
I'll second.
Have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Adoption of the agenda. I think we have one thing. Well, you have it in front of you. It's on the agenda, 10.3. I think our attorney, Mr. Eldred, just got the information to us late, so Mandy made copies of that. But the agenda is as presented. It's on the agenda, so we could do that.
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. I make a motion that we accept the agenda as printed.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Agenda is adopted. Next is public comment. Persons making public comments shall do so from the podium, provide their name, address, and will be limited to 3 minutes. Written and emailed comments will not be read in the meeting and will be included in the minutes of the meeting. Speaking out of turn from the audience and inflammatory, immaterial, or irrational comments are not permitted. A comment seeking a response may be responded by the council, addressed during department reports, or delegated to staff to address. We have one person, Ms. Barbara Irwin, if you would please.
Barbara Irwin, 301 Settlers Lane. I recently attended Coffee with the Mayor and brought up the idea of adopting term limits for our committee chairpersons. I was advised to put it in writing and present it to Town Council. Tonight I am asking Town Council to consider limiting the time a chairperson can serve on our various committees. I understand it is sometimes hard to get these volunteers to serve, but I feel term limits should apply to committee chairpersons. My reasons are as follows. Over time, individuals may become entrenched in their positions, leading to complacency and resistance to change. Term limits allows for new ideas, approaches, and priorities. Term limits will prevent the concentration of power in the hands of a few individuals. If their term is indefinite, there is a risk of monopolizing authority that can affect decision-making that prioritizes personal interests over the good for all. Term limits will provide for different perspectives and talents within the community. It is sometimes hard to fill committee seats because of the chairperson's unwillingness to listen to or adopt opposing ideas within the group. Term limits aligns itself with our democratic principles of governing. We should always have a rotation of power. This will ensure all decisions are made for the greater for all. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. That's all. That's the only one I had signed up tonight for a public comment. All right. There are no presentations tonight, so on to committee business. Bike Ped, Mo.
That will work out fine as we move forward. We are signed up at the summer markets and will blast our campaigns, Be Safe, Be Seen, along with Heads Up, Phones Down. The most exciting news is that on Friday, May 17th, National Bike to School Day, we were escorted by New Hanover County deputies led by a member of the Cape Fear Cyclists to Carolina Beach Elementary School. Mayor Oliver, thank you for riding with us, and a special thank you to our police department for stopping traffic as we crossed Settlers and K. One family pulled up to Joe Eats Park with bikes on the back of their car because their home is south of the White Pillars in Fort Fisher, and that was the safest way for them to join the fun. This young family is dedicated to teach their children safe bicycling habits. The mom said to me, "We wanted to bike to school because we got the flyer. Our son is in his last few days of school at CB Elementary, and was something fun we were interested in doing as a family and something I would remember with him. It felt better doing it with a set route and knowing it would be safe." We rode down Settlers, the Spot Lane connector, and on to Island Greenway. It was a fantastic way to start the day. Once we got to the school, there were about 85 kids altogether who biked to school that day, combining Curry Beach and Carolina Beach. But the best part of that day for our committee was the annual traffic garden held at the school. Our committee spent hours designing the course. Steve Shoemate and Jerry Clark measured and plotted the new course for their configuration. Thursday night, we met with about 10 volunteers to construct the course, and we finished in about 2 hours, record time. On Friday morning, Eileen Clute and I had ridden with the kids to school, and we were joined by Will Reynolds, who transported all the equipment. Community volunteers started showing up. Many were from Curry Beach Baptist Church. Kelly even convinced Pastor Andrew to join in the fun. Carolyn from WMPO and Paige from Safe Kids arrived, and then Tammy from the Terry Benji Bicycling Foundation pulled up with a trailer full of bikes and more supplies were unloaded. The concept of a traffic garden is a statewide effort to teach elementary students about bicycling safety and how vehicles coexist with pedestrians and people on bikes in traffic. This same program will follow them to becoming a bicycle-friendly driver when they get their driver's license. We are on the forefront of this effort, and where better to teach young kids about crosswalks than in a vacation town that has crosswalks to reach beach accesses. The event was targeted at the second graders, 80 in all, broken into four classes from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Tammy began by teaching proper hand signals. Al Kroom and Jerry Clark were experts at pumping air into tires and using tools to adjust the bikes to fit the kids, many with training wheels because some of these kids had never ridden a bike before. Steve Shoemate taught the kids the ABCs of bicycle maintenance: air, brakes, chains. You can see the smile on their faces as they ride the safety course. Stopping for pedestrians in crosswalks was a big part of the learning experience. And at times, it was even created a traffic jam. Paige from Safe Kids and Eileen Klute talk with kids about safety. This line of traffic is approaching a stop sign. They have to be aware of the entrance where more riders may be entering. One of the favorite teachings is what to do if a bad dog approaches you. As you can see, volunteers love to play the roles of bad dog. Fountains of video. Get off your bike, put bike between you and dog to protect you, and get away from dog. Officer McNeil from Carolina Beach Police Department rode up on his new electric bike. Nicole from Three Wheel Therapy helped with proper helmet fitting. And of course, the assistant principal could not resist the fun. He borrowed the officer's bike and my helmet and rode the course. Once again, look at the smile on his face. Will Reynolds applied for and our town was awarded a grant from NCDOT for helmets for kids. We gave away helmets on Friday to any child who needed one. We have them available till supplies last. The Bikehead Committee wants to give these to our children who need one, and we can be contacted through our Gmail account. The two last updates are Al Kroom applied for and our town was awarded a $2,300 grant from the Terry Benji Bicycling Foundation for 3 6 ribbon galvanized bike racks to be installed at three of our new lighted crosswalks. Roy Irwin suggested placement avoid sand spurs as this can be a hazard for bike tires. We welcome feedback like that from our neighbors and avid bicyclists. And lastly, the Curry Cruisers will once again join the Tour de Blueberry ride in Burgos Saturday, June 15th, and we welcome all riders to join. Choose your distance, 10, 22, 33, or 66 mile ride, and select the Curry Cruisers as your team. Registration and waivers can be found on the committee page on the town website. Complete the sign-up and waiver. Both forms need to be completed to ride in this event. Funds raised at this event support Burgaw Middle School, the NC Blueberry Festival Scholarship, and the Terry Benji Bicycling Foundation, the Hampstead Hams Panderlia Volunteer Fire Department, and Sand Hill AME Church. Be sure to check out the festival afterwards. We will see you at the summer markets. Heads up, phones down. Any questions?
Thank you, Mo.
Thank you, Mo. It was a great day. The kids had a good time, and I think the teachers did too. So they have the curriculum now, and they can teach it as much as they want. So it's great. Thank you. All right, Community Center Committee, Nick, you got anything? We didn't meet this past month, so no comment, no report there. Historic Preservation, Byron, any report? Marketing Committee, Mark?
Yes, okay. Hello, Town Council, Commissioners. I just wanted to say that I know I was a little direct with you guys last week. But sometimes, you know, I have to be a little direct to get some attention. I wanted to reach out to you guys and say I appreciate you listening. Connie and I met, we've talked, we're looking at the strategy that we have. We're reassessing it and continuing to look at how we can continue to watch over the marketing and tourism for this town. Tomorrow, we are meeting with the CBB for the budget review. We're just going to be meeting with them to discuss it and see where it's going and offer our input. And then we're going to also go over the tourism master plan. And for me and for our committee, you know, what we want to work towards, and Connie and I had a great conversation. She said Ms. Michael had a commission, had a great discussion about how we can look at, you know, the branding guidelines ideas, the involvement with the TDA and even with the CBMAC, And, you know, mostly just trying to figure out how do we continue to consult and advise the CPB. So I appreciate you guys listening last week and a good reset. Thank you.
Connie and I did have a breakfast meeting with the for the kickoff of Tourism Week last week, and we got to meet. We actually sit at the same table with the gentleman that's going to be doing the long-range plan, and had a great conversation, got to meet him, and he's going to engage each one of the communities on that small part, so on their individual part. So the committee will be involved, and all the things you want to cover should be covered underneath that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's going to be like a 10-year master plan. The other thing I was going to note is when we meet tomorrow, the budget that they're presenting, they're expecting the town council to approve it at our June 17th meeting, the budget.
Okay, if we could send that out ahead of time so we could see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Planning and Zoning Commission, nothing this month. Shoreline Access and Beach Protection.
Nothing. We committee did meet, but there's nothing new to report.
Okay. Stormwater committee. Tracy? Nothing. All right. Department head business. Mandy?
I don't have any updates.
Administration, none. Okay. Development and compliance. Bethany was not able to be here tonight, but she didn't have anything to report. I did talk with her a little bit, and her permit report and her violations report or in the agenda packet. If y'all have any questions, contact her. Finance, Arlen, you have anything before your...
No updates.
Okay, thank you. If just for everybody's knowledge, in your agenda packet is some really good information about our town and our finance situation there. We don't always go through it all, but it does list like our investments and also our debt and revenue expense summary for the council. So it's a lot of good information there. I think Ed is on a fire call.
Water rescue itself.
So, but Ed's report is also in. He did have a water rescue that he is on right now. Mike?
No,
please, thank you. And Jim, Public Works, a couple things, I think.
Yeah, I just want to give council a couple of updates on some projects we have going on around town. I actually have the asphalt pavers coming in. They came in today and started doing some batching around town. Also, AC Schultes is working on the third well out of the four wells that we're getting rehabbed. So they should be completed hopefully this week on their third well. Andrews Consulting came down about 2 weeks ago and surveyed the boardwalk and the bulkhead. And I haven't got a report on that yet, but I just want council to know that these projects are continuing on. And also that let council know that I got a request from Blakesley Air Force Base. They are wanting to do an 8-inch tap for some fire suppression. I'm not quite sure of the details right now, but I will get back to y'all on the next council meeting on this. It's a lot bigger tap than, you know, it's going to be an 8-inch tap, so it's going to be kind of costly. So just want council to know that.
Just for council on that, so historically we have funded those taps, and then the project pays us back after the fact, so we'll have to work with Arlen on the budget proper way to do that. But it'll be fairly expensive because there's backflow preventers in there, and there's under 421 to get to our side. So there'll be under road boring as well. So it'll be fairly expensive.
Yeah.
Jimmy, we have a contractor that we just use for those big taps and stuff.
My understanding last time that this was done, we supplied water to them. We actually used their contractors to do the work.
Right.
But we hired an engineer to engineer the backflow and the water tap and everything like that.
Okay.
Before. So, and one more thing, we have Civil Solutions in town doing the lining of the stormwater pipes. So they should be finished up this week also.
I did talk with Neil Andrew on another matter last week, and he's hoping by the end of this week to have you the report.
Okay.
On the bulkhead and everything.
Good deal. That's it for both works.
Recreation, Nikki. Welcome back.
Just one quick announcement. If you see a new face around the building, our summer intern started today, Shannon Colley. She's going into her senior year.
Stand so we can see you. Stand.
Tourism, sport, and recreation at UNCW. And she's helping us out throughout the summer. That's all with recreation this evening.
All right. That's all the department head business. Old business, consideration of action on the proposed text amendments to KBC 13.14.020 Beach Seagull Ordinance. Mr. Eldred.
Thank you. I'm going to be referring to the red line document.
Okay.
And also want to make clear the distinction between, this is actually the Seagull Ordinance.
Seagull.
I'll tell you how I expanded that.
Okay.
But this is not the civil penalty item that we'll get to.
Right.
Later.
We'll get to that new business, yeah.
I thought I was instructed by council last month to draft proposed text amendments prohibiting the feeding of birds on the beach. And the logical place to put that was 13.14.020 Beach, which has several prohibitions enumerated therein. When I got into that section, I thought it could be rearranged and further amended beyond the Seagull item, and that's what I did. For example, if you look at page one of the red line, the beach definitions section was actually in the middle of that article. Actually, that section 020, and made a lot more sense and allowed me to eliminate a lot more language by moving those definitions up to the front. If you go down to D at the bottom of the red line, with paddle boarding, sail boarding, and swimming being just as in the same boat, so to speak, as surfing, I went ahead and expanded that concept to include those things. For example, previously, you couldn't surf in that proximity to the pier, but by not mentioning paddle boarding or sailboarding, you could do that. So I've expanded that to cover those items. Likewise, if you turn the page, the leash is now by taking all those activities and collectively referring to them as board. Now all those activities require a board leash, not just surfing. If you get down to, just as an example of syntax, if you look at F near the bottom of page two, instead of saying beach within the town's corporate limits, anytime thereafter, we can just refer to beach based on the definitions in the front. The one that you instructed me on is on the middle of the page three, seagulls, feeding birds. It shall be unlawful for any person to feed the birds while at the beach or while in or on any public place adjacent to or abutting the beach. I don't know if he's here tonight, but a gentleman came up to me afterwards and said you should include public spaces, and I thought about that, and that made sense. If you're trying to prohibit feeding on the beach, you don't want them to get around that by feeding from the walkway, for example. Mm-hmm. So I think that covers it. Talking with the chief, we wanted to do the second offense as a misdemeanor. I suggested a $25 civil penalty. You all can instruct me if you move forward with this on a different amount if you want. Let's see what we got here. I think the rest of it is pretty much syntax. Didn't change anything substantive regarding public access, beach vitex, fire on the beach. If you look at page five, that's where the definitions in the middle used to be. So like I said, I moved them up front. Beach equipment, just cleaned up the syntax on that a little bit. Oh, an interesting one is page six, temporary structures. The current version starts out with tents, canopies, other membrane structures having in excess of 200 square feet. but the remainder of that provision simply refers to tense. So I covered everything by making tense, et cetera, temporary structures in the beginning and then referring to temporary structures through the rest of that provision. And I think that pretty much sums up the changes that I made. I'll be glad to answer any questions if you have any. Otherwise, this doesn't require a legislative hearing, so you can move forward with a motion to adopt these text amendments.
Okay.
I have one question, Jim. Yes, on page one, basically the new B, I guess, or the new A, sleeping says after midnight.
That's what the, yes, I didn't.
It's always after midnight. Should that be between midnight and 6 or midnight 4?
Pulling that pin.
It's not always after midnight at midnight, but right. That's an interesting concept.
I mean, it's after midnight right now.
That's from, you're correct. I
guess it's tip my hat to 6 a.m.
I didn't catch that. Do you have a suggestion on how it should be worded?
I would say no sleeping between midnight and
sunrise.
5:30, 6 o'clock, 4 o'clock. I don't know. When do people get out there and start
sunrise.
Playing?
Sunrise.
So between midnight and sunrise, prohibited.
Published yep. Sunrise.
Yep.
The WWAY sunrise.
Sleeping on beach between midnight and sunrise, prohibited. That's the way I've got it worded now.
I think that'll work.
So if y'all want to, unless there's any other questions, you know.
As okay, the Jim, the area about close to the beach, that would cover Oceanfront Park, the boardwalk area. Do we need to specify?
Come out seagulls?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I think it would.
Okay. And I had another question I highlighted here. Oh. Okay, so you say the town's building inspector and the New Hanover County fire inspector?
That's the way it's currently yep. written, and I was hoping Ed would be here so I could ask him that question.
But we have a fire inspector.
Right.
We do now. We didn't when this was written, if you look when it was written in 89.
Send me to where you are real quickly.
Temporary structures, page 6.
Page 6. Yeah, I wondered about that. So we can cross out the New Hanover County inspector?
I think you can and put Town of Curie Beach.
I'm trying to find it in that.
It's about four
sentences. It's far the fourth sentence.
The building inspector, the town's fire. Do we have a fire inspector or a fire chief?
We have a fire inspector. We do have a fire inspector.
All right, I've got that change made. Good catch, thank you.
Any other questions, comments?
Couple. Just above that, where the fire chief and assistant fire chief can issue tickets, right?
Citations.
Is that currently?
That's current language. All I did was capitalize.
Is that provided for in our current job descriptions for the fire chief and assistant to issue citations?
I'm not sure. I can't answer that question.
Probably not.
I don't think it's required because I think the state of North Carolina gives the fire chief that authority.
Yeah.
So I don't think it has to be in our job.
Oh, okay. So the state of North Carolina allows that.
The fire chief can cite violations for fire code issues. Yes.
This is provisions of subsection above, right?
Yes, the fires on the beach part. I think is
that the only?
Well, no,
it
that's
wasn't clear to me.
Police chief or fire chief.
The subsection, is if you flip back one piece, is a P, placement of beach equipment.
Yeah, so that was a question, I guess. Is.
I mean, Mike, how would you do it if the if the fire department called you? Your guys would issue the citation, right?
We could write it. They could write it. It was always my understanding that any department head could write.
Right.
A civil violation.
Right.
They don't do that. We do it 99% of the time, but I have had John Batson write a few civil citations in the past.
Okay. I just want to check on
it. I know that the lifeguards patrol that, so it could be that's why the fire chief is listed.
Yeah, but I mean, I agree with Mike. Typically, I know that the previous fire chief wrote a couple of citations just because he wanted to, but I think the majority of the time, the on-duty departments are going to call, and the fire chief's not normally on duty. So that the lifeguards are going to call the police.
And
the captains are going to call the police.
And the provisions got both police and
right.
fire chief.
Yeah.
Okay, we good?
I have a question on C1.
What page, ma'am?
Page 1.
Page 1, C1.
Where it talks about being unlawful, where you can use a surfboard, and it mentions about, you know, in proximity to the Curry Beach Pier.
Yes, ma'am.
There are other places, like where the Dow Chemical, you know, the concrete, where that says you aren't supposed to surf, and I don't know if there's other places along the beach where it says you're not supposed to surf, or is that the only one?
I mean, that's the only one, and it says swimming, not surfing.
It just says
that's
swimming.
Just a safety sign.
So
you can surf there. Yeah.
So they can surf there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just a, I don't think we've never addressed that, have we?
No, and we just put a sign on the beach to tell people there's a safety issue,
safety
but there's
issue
no laws against if they go out there.
Yeah.
Okay. Just curious.
Did you get all the changes, Mr.?
I only caught.
Yeah, that, I don't think there was a change of question.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I know, but I mean.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have one other question.
Yes, sir.
And the definitions of beach.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about mean low water line. 2, and including the stable line of natural vegetation. So this doesn't include the dunes themselves?
I can plug that in. Actually, I'm not that confident. I figured the natural vegetation occurred on or behind landward the dune. So I thought the dune would be included, but there are people out there that know more about the sections of the beach than I ever will.
Yeah, my sense is that the first line of stable vegetation would be right at the dune line.
That's right at the dune line, correct. You're correct.
Right in the dunes, then
so what would
move
be,
westward.
What would be the terminology for going landward behind the dune, capturing the dune?
I think it would be best if we had another line that we can refer to behind the dunes, and I think we'd have to defer to Bethany on that. On camera regulations, Alan, do you have any sense?
We could say the dunes, the established dunes.
Yeah, that's an easy way to cover.
Well, that's fine, but I was just.
I mean, you don't want somebody standing doing it and they say, "Oh, I'm throwing the bread in the dunes."
Well, it says adjacent to the beach,
yeah.
So you're covered.
Yeah.
The bird issue, but
I would put adjacent dunes, sand dunes.
From the mean low water line to and including the adjacent dune.
Mm-hmm.
The adjacent dune.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you.
Can you give a citation if you're in the dunes?
Yes.
Yes.
So there's signs, and yes, you can.
Right. So you can't be feeding the birds in the dunes because you're not allowed in there.
Being in the on the dune is prohibited under this particular section.
Jim, I got one more. On page 3.
Page 3.
Boat and jet ski, and then what's prohibited.
Mm-hmm.
The boat or jet ski defined as a vessel watercraft of any type or size specifically designed to be self-propelled. So I cannot take my kayak and be within 300 feet of the shore? And I can't launch it from the shore?
No,
you can.
Provided they are not in it, you can launch from the shore. That's in the next subsection.
But it said you can't launch
by engine, sail, or paddle.
Shall be lawful to launch a boat or jet ski from the beach or from land, provided there are not any other persons in the area closer than 50 feet to the boat or jet ski.
Shall be lawful. I thought it was unlawful.
Yep.
Sorry. Got it.
So the changes I've got is dunes, include dunes for the definition of beach, sleeping on the beach between midnight and sunrise prohibited, and somewhere else there's one other one. The town's fire inspector.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions, comments? Entertain a motion to approve.
Make a motion to approve with the three changes as discussed.
Have a motion, have a second.
I second.
Any other discussion or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? Thank you, Jim.
Nice job, Jim.
All right, Arlen, you're up under new business with the presentation of budget message draft for fiscal year
24-25. I'm going to
get that, Arlen, one second. Oh. Wow.
Sorry,
Jim. I'm going to contact my lawyer.
Nice.
I know a good one. His
not cooperating, man.
It's frozen. It won't do anything.
You gotta wing it. Well,
that controls the button.
Lately, I can't even escape that. It's yelling at me when I try to escape. Hold on.
I can go ahead and get started.
Yeah, go ahead and get started.
Go ahead. I'm just gonna restart.
So, I'm pleased to present the proposed 2025 fiscal year 2025. Three beach budget for your review and consideration. So I'll start out with just some general information that's required. So the budget is prepared in accordance with the applicable North Carolina general statutes and also the Local Government Budget and Fiscal Control Act. As required by the state statutes, a public hearing must be held before council would adopt the budget. That public hearing is scheduled for Monday, June 10th at 6 p.m. Once this proposal is accepted by council tonight, it will be available for review by the public on the town website and also here at Town Hall. And then finally, a balanced budget or an interim budget must be adopted before July 1st. So the actual budget proposal consists of three parts. There's the budget message, and all of these are in the agenda packet. The budget message, which summarizes all of the key highlights for each budget, for each fund, and identifies significant differences between the budget proposal and the current year. The draft budget ordinance, which is the statutory document that authorizes the budget for the year. And then also the fee schedule, which includes all of the rates and fees for services that the town provides. This part would be easier if we had it up, but it was really a summary of the town council's goals, I guess, for this year. And I didn't want to go in great detail, but I just wanted to put those up here so that residents could see those and to know that the budget is based on those goals. I mean, there's other factors too, but those goals are considered when developing the upcoming budget.
There is one addition to the goals under F that y'all requested after the last meeting, that we added the funding that you had.
Hey, good job. Yep.
Get up to where we So this identifies the goals established by council, and again, not to go into any great detail, but you know, the first one is, you know, work smarter to maintain, improve our quality of life, and things like implement the approved CAMA land use plan, continue to work with MACHU, with the Department of Defense land use plan, implement the bike ped master plan, implement the approved beach management plan, continue to work with the leaders of the General Assembly to identify the needs of the town. This is the one that the mayor just mentioned. Explore the following areas for funding for future capital projects for things like you know, the bike ped initiatives, Sandman Park, Joe Weeks Park, the boardwalk, you know, et cetera. And there could be a variety of different funding sources that are identified there. The second goal is to ensure the integrity of town financial data and maintain financial stability. So the council goal is to be fiscally responsible and to set the tax and water and sewer rates that support the expected level of service to be citizens of the town. So the third goal is to enable an optimum working environment for the staff to produce high levels of service. So that's things like ensure that policies are fair, procedures are in place to retain and attract town employees, and that we update and adjust the salary plan for employees as necessary to stay competitive with our neighboring towns. The fourth one is to provide all departments with the support to maintain a safe working and living environment, and that includes things like supporting the police department's camera program, using technology as much as possible to support all town functions, to continue to improve the employee safety plan, support the police department's canine program, and to provide necessary tools so that there's a safe working environment. So that's a quick overview of what the town council has set as their goals for fiscal year 2025. So next we'll look at the actual budget that's being proposed. So the budget's actually, for the town, is made up of seven different funds, some of them operating funds, some of them kind of like capital reserve funds. So the largest fund is the general fund, and that's about, I'm going to round numbers to make it simple, about $9.1 million. That's an increase of about 12.6% over the current year. The next fund is the water and sewer fund at about $3 million, and that's an increase of 11.2%. The stormwater fund, which is $522,000, that's actually a decrease from the current year of just about $587,000, or about 53%. The Powell fund at $97,150, that's an increase of 37.8%. Federal asset forfeiture fund is the same as the current year at $25,000. Beach protection fund is actually a decrease of about 40% or $16,000. And the sewer expansion reserve fund is $23,395, which is an increase of a little over $5,000 or 27.3%. So I'll go into more detail on each one of those funds, but that just provides kind of like a quick overview of what it looks like. I will say that as council knows, we had many work sessions. We had a retreat and then two different work sessions on the budget. This budget is balanced, and overall of all seven funds combined is just about $13 million. So I'll start with the general fund. That's our largest fund that has the most services included, and just kind of give some highlights, I guess. So as I mentioned, in the previous slide, so the fund is increasing by about 12.6%. It's kind of the net effect of operating expenses going up about 10%, capital expenditures going up about 112%, and debt service actually decreasing by 3%. Included in this budget is a proposed property tax increase. That increases 2 cents, which comes out to about 9.1% of, and that's based on $100 of property valuation. That would make our new property tax rate 29 cents. Also included is an increase to garbage collection fees and recycle collection fees. For garbage collection, it's an increase of 25%. It takes the, per resident, residential account, it takes the first card from $7 a month to $8.75. If you have more than one card, so the second and beyond, that goes from $14 a card to $17.50. And for commercial accounts, it goes from $30.63 to $38.29 a month. And I will say on the garbage collection, these rates have not changed for 6 years. Costs have significantly increased, so that's really the driving force between the need to increase these rates. Also recycle, it shows an increase of 5.3%. That's actually just passing on, as we do in the past, exactly what the our service provider is charging. So they are told us there's going to be a 5.3% increase. So the budget also includes for employees a 3.2% cost of living adjustment. I will say that that is consistent with what Social Security did back in January when they gave participants in Social Security that same type of increase. It also includes a 2.8% merit increase pool, that's to reward employees that are performing above exceptions. Budget also includes one addition to the police department, which is really to address the increasing demands on personnel and the, you know, the increase in, you know, tourism to the town, so to provide the appropriate level of service at all times. Budget also includes capital expenditures of a little over $638,000. And then finally, the debt service, or the loan payments basically for that related to the general fund are a little over $701,000. So that kind of is the highlights, or what I felt were the highlights for the budget. So actually it's kind of covered in just a little bit more detail, but not a lot, is the actual revenue for the general fund. So what this pie chart shows is the allocation based on revenue type. So really the seven largest components of that, which are property tax at about about 3.8 million, sales tax at about 1.7, parking at about 820,000, TDA funds at around 777,000, garbage and recycle at 651,000, franchise and utility tax at $264,000, and investment earnings at around $175,000. So those three components of the budget and revenue for the general fund make up almost $8.2 million of the entire amount, which is about 90% of the budget. So you can see that once we get past those seven sources, it's really a much smaller contribution than all of the other areas provide. And I will, in regard to the property tax, in the next slide, we have an example of what the impact will be, you know, on a, what you want to call an average, but a property in Curie Beach. Also included in the revenue budget is what's identified as other financing sources. So that would be proposed loans for this upcoming year. And those are two things. One is a garbage truck that will be is planned to be purchased, and then also two vehicles. So those three items would be loans estimated at about $380,000. And then finally, there's an appropriation of fund balance of a little over $161,000, and it's really to use a small portion of our accumulated fund balance to pay for some capital projects. Anybody have any questions on the general fund revenue? So I'll just go through a real simple example of the impact of the property tax increase. As I said, it's like 9.1%. I will say that there's a typo in that, so that middle one that says proposed tax rate increase, that should be 0.02. So there's a zero missing there. But So what it shows is, based on a property valued at $600,000, at the current rate, the tax is $1,594.80. The proposed increase would actually be $145.20, or will come out to about $12.10 per month, making the total tax now on this type of property $1,740. So that, just to give somebody, you know, everyone a ballpark of what that could be. So next, I just wanted to show some comparative information for general fund revenue. This is a little bit busy or whatever, but it really, and this will be throughout the different components that we do, revenue and expense, showing the proposed budget, which is in green, to the forecast for this current year, which is red, and then the actual from fiscal year 2023, which is in blue. And it's really, a lot of it shows that we're fairly consistent from year to year. I mean, you can see the impact of the proposed tax increase on the first column to the left on property taxes, and the green column being higher than the prior 2 years. Some of the other areas that fluctuate more are in TDA funds, and that's as we've had increased tourism and more room occupancy tax coming in. There's more funds available for tourism-related activities, so we've been able to use more of that money for the largest component that we do is at our ocean rescue services. 100% of that is paid for by TDA. You also see some fluctuations on the far right in financing transfers and fund balance, and that primarily relates to how much financing we have to do in any particular year based on the amount of capital expenditures that we have. So does anyone have any questions on general fund revenue? So then we'll look at general fund expenses. Again, we have the pie chart approach. The six largest components of the expense budget are police at about $2.2 million, public works, streets and sanitation at about $2 million, fire department at about $1.6 million, debt service at $701,000, ocean rescue at about $638,000, and administration about $487,000. So those six functions account for about 85% of the total general fund budget. There's also a category on there called other. That's things like tax collection, community center committees, emergency management, so a variety of smaller type areas. I guess in regard to general fund expenses, I just want to make a couple other comments about those. This is where we pay for the majority of the services for the town. Basically everything that's not water and sewer and stormwater. Everything else is paid out of here. So, you know, everything public safety, you know, police, fire, ocean rescue, garbage, trash, recycle. Just general maintenance and town upkeep, building inspection, code enforcement, parks and recreation, just overall administration. So there's a lot that's paid out of here, so that's why it is the largest fund. So some of the reasons that expenses are going up, of course, like everybody, you know, costs are increasing. So we've seen some significant increases in, you know, for supplies, materials, fuel, services. We do have to remain competitive with what we pay employees. It's important. It's difficult to attract employees, and we want to make sure we definitely retain employees. So that's why this budget has the cost of living adjustment and also the merit increase pool. There's also a portion of the budget that is for, up there it's identified as governing body, that's the town council part of the budget. And there are some payments that are made. There's a whole process for outside organizations to submit an application requesting funding that they're in particular providing services to Peoria Beach residents that aren't actually offered by the town. So town council goes through a whole process to identify, based on those applications, what they may or may not fund. So there's a couple organizations that are being funded, the Pleasure Island Chamber of Commerce for the Fort Fisher concerts and for the Kite Festival at $30,000. The North Carolina Aquarium Society at $10,000. The Federal Point Historic Preservation Society at $5,000. Katie B. Hines Senior Center at $5,000. The Help Center of Federal Point at $1,800. And the Island of Lights at $1,200. So those all add up to about $53,000 that are added to the town council budget. The town council budget also includes about $1,400 that the that New Hanover County has requested as the town's share of the charges for the Carolina Beach Daylight Dredging. And that's a normal every year kind of thing. This amount this year is substantially less than it has been in some prior years. So. I had mentioned before about capital projects. They do total about $638,000. They're things, replacement of a garbage truck for $250,000. Part of the street paving that's planned for the town is $175,000. There's also more in another fund, which we'll talk about later. There's another $75,000. So a grand total of $250,000 for street paving that's planned. There's some vehicle replacements. All combined at about $130,000, and then some other equipment that, for fire and ocean rescue, that are about $83,000. I don't know if anyone has any questions on the general fund expense budget. So again, this is even busier than the one on revenue, but this is just some comparative information to show. The same time periods, you know, the budget, the forecast, and the actual from 2023. And you do get some fluctuation, but what you really see, you know, fluctuation in like police, fire, and streets and sanitation, it really relates to the amount of capital expenditures in a given year. I mean, for police, it's actually for the proposed for 2025, it's also the addition of a new full-time person also. But for the most part, the fluctuations that occur are capital outlay. It varies by year to year. So before we move to the water and sewer fund, do anyone have any questions on the general fund?
No.
Nice job.
Okay, for the water and sewer fund, overall this fund is projected to increase by about 11.2%. So it's kind of the net effect of operating expenses going up by 13.5%, capital outlay increasing by about 15%, and debt service decreasing by 7%. Included in water and sewer is a proposed 10% increase to the water and sewer usage-based rate tiers. So what that means, you know, we have a tiered structure for how we bill for water and sewer services. The minimum, which I'll go a little more detail on this in just a minute, but the minimum will stay the same. There'll be no increase for that. So it's only when you exceed the minimum number of gallons that there would be a 10% increase. Water and sewer also includes $460,000 for potential infrastructure projects, and then the debt service in this fund is $323,000. So I'll move to the water and sewer fund revenue budget. So as we would expect, water and sewer charges are the bulk of the revenue for this fund, about 89%. There's other things, tap connection and cutoff fees. That's when there's new construction, there has to be water and sewer taps. Cutoff fees are, unfortunately, when people do not pay their bills and their service has to be cut off, there's costs associated with that, so we recover that through these fees. There's also a thing on there that's called AIA grant proceeds. So that's, we were awarded two grants over a year ago at this point, but they're in progress. It's to have inventory and assessments done with both the water and sewer systems. So those are in progress, but we're projecting that we use about $150,000 of that next year. So that's what that is. And then the investment earnings is, again, as we have assets then, and rather than keeping all the cash just in the bank, but we do invest in certain things that's allowable per North Carolina statutes and try to earn as much as we can on those investments. And then there's another revenue category, and the major parts of that are pass-through fees and then also new account setup fees. So then, any questions on any of that? So I just wanted to run through quickly, I guess, the impact of the proposed 10% rate tier increase. So to continue the philosophy that we've had for a number of years at this point, what we want to do when we increase rates is to put more of the financial responsibility on the people that are actually using the most water and sewer resources. So that's what this does when we increase the usage-based rate tiers. So the proposal is to increase those rate tiers by 10%. Based on historical data, that would impact approximately 55% of the annual residential billings. So this chart shows what those rates would look like. The rates in red represent the 10% increase. And what those are is they're the rate per 100 gallons. And on there you can see that in the first line, so the minimum up to 2,000 gallons, there is no change. So if you use 2,000 gallons or less, you will see no increase at all in your water and sewer charges. So I thought I'd just show a couple examples of what it would look like. So I just left the one at 2,000 gallons. Well, you use 2,000, you see no increase at all. The second example is if you were to use 5,000 gallons, you would see an increase of $4.48, or about 5.5%. Next is if you were to use 12,000 gallons, you would see an increase of $18.70, or about 8.4%. And the last example for a residential account is at 18,000 gallons. And yes, some people use 18,000 gallons or more in a month. You would see an increase of $38.89, or about 9.1%. So any questions? So I'll show the same information. The same theory goes with commercial accounts. Again, it's the usage-based rate tiers that are increasing by 10%, so that's what's identified on that table. I also have two examples for a commercial account. So if they were to use an account were to use 20,000 gallons, they would see an increase of $36.77, or 8.9%. If they were to use 100,000 gallons in a month, they would see an increase of $215.51, or 9.8%. And our last type of customer is our out of jurisdiction, which for us is our Fort Fisher customers. So again, same thing. Increase the usage-based tiers by 10%, so that's what's identified in red. Some examples of our Fort Fisher customers are like the Air Force Base, the recreation area, the aquarium, the historic site. And some of those have multiple accounts, I guess, with us for different things. So I've also shown two examples for any out-of-jurisdiction account. If we were to use 20,000 gallons, it would see an increase of $47.05, or 8.8%. And if they used 250,000 gallons, it would see an increase of $765.74, or 9.9%. So any questions on any of
them? No. Fun job.
So I'll just show some comparative information. So for water and sewer charges, sorry. So you can see the impact of the increase in green for water and sewer charges, the proposed increase for this upcoming year. Most of the other revenue categories are fairly consistent. The grant proceeds are in this current year and fiscal 25. And transfers in 23 related to the American Rescue Plan and transfers in for capital projects. Any questions on water and sewer revenue? Expenses, as we would expect, operations is about 70% of the budget. I'll just kind of say in general with the water and sewer expenses, we've had some sizable increases, especially in things like chemicals, you know, other supplies and materials, services that we contract for. So because of that, operating expenses are up about 13.5%. The overall budget up is up about 11.2, but operating expenses about 13.5%. There is debt service of about $323,000. And the capital outlay is $460,000 for potential or emergency infrastructure projects and also for one of our lift stations that needs a new generator. So this just shows some comparative information for water and sewer fund expenses. Again, you see the primary difference in operations really relates to the amount of capital in any given year, and also there's certain years where we may have more maintenance costs than other years. In particular, over the last year or so, we had some sludge removal from the lagoon, so there's some increased maintenance costs. So does anyone have any questions on water and sewer?
Yep.
And we'll move to stormwater. So stormwater is actually about 53% less than the current year budget. That's really because this current year we had a very significant project, a capital project, which ultimately was decided to be deferred, so it wasn't performed, but that's the reason last year's budget was much higher than normal. So this kind of brings us in line now with what we normally would be. There are no proposed changes to the stormwater fees. We're including about $150,000 for infrastructure projects, and the debt service in this fund is about $48,000. So this chart shows a relatively simple distribution of revenue for this fund, which is primarily the monthly stormwater fees that everybody pay are about 81%, and there's stormwater building fees on new construction, and then investment earning on fund assets. So this just is, again, like I've done with the other funds, some comparative information. You see that the primary revenue source is staying flat because it's we haven't increased fees. There might be some fluctuations with new homes being built, but it's, for the most part, been flat. The building fees, as I said, are on new construction, so they can vary based on the amount of building activity. And then, again, we invest funds as much as we can where we can earn some investment earnings, so that's the other component of the stormwater revenue. So does anyone have any questions on the stormwater revenue?
Sure.
So we'll look at stormwater expenses. So that's kind of broken up at 62% to operational expenses, 9% to debt service, and 29% to capital outlay. So kind of a normal distribution for this fund. This chart shows, again, the comparative information like all the others, and you can see that operating expenses have gone up because of the cost of material supplies, services. Our debt service is coming down a little bit as a loan was paid off for a piece of equipment. And capital outlay has been fairly consistent. It really depends on the needs for any given year for infrastructure projects. So does anyone have any questions on stormwater?
Right.
And we just have the remaining four smaller funds. So the first being the PAL bill fund. This money is what's considered restricted money. It can only be used for street repairs, maintenance, construction of streets, that type of thing. The primary revenue source is the allocation we receive from the Department of Transportation. It's based on a formula of town-owned street mileage and population. So the estimate for this upcoming year is about $72,000. There's also an appropriation of fund balance of $25,000 included, and it's an interest income that the appropriation of fund balance is to pay for some of the paving projects that I mentioned earlier. Questions on the Powell bill?
Sure.
We have the federal asset forfeiture. This fund is actually when the police department participates in investigations conducted by primarily federal agencies. We've kind of been sharing the outcome of those investigations, and based on the level of resources provided, we get an allocation of assets that are forfeited. This fund's a little bit different, also restricted. It cannot be used just for normal operating expenses of the police department. It can only be used, and it can only be used for police department related expenses. But it has to be outside of your normal operating budget. So this is budgeted at $25,000, which would be an appropriation of the fund balance, and then $25,000 for any applicable expenses. Any questions on that fund? So next is the Beach Protection Fund. This is really for, was set up in case we needed funding for any beach nourishment costs. It can also be used for things like beach access repairs or improvements or dune maintenance, dune plantings, anything related to the beach. And for this upcoming year, it's the, we're just looking at investment earnings of about $24,000, and the intent is then increase in this reserve fund of $24,000. Any questions on beach protection? So last is the sewer expansion reserve fund. The purpose of this fund is for, as you would guess, future expansion, construction, repairs of the sewer system. So the primary revenue source for this is system development fees on new construction. So that system development fees and the amount of investment earnings is estimated at just about $23,400. And then there would be the related increase in that reserve fund. So any questions on the SURF fund?
Sure.
So then I just want to say I think overall that the budget, is thorough review of everything that the town needs, but also being, conservative and reasonable in our estimates of revenue. I think it supports the goals that council established. I think it shows that the town were providing, I think, exceptional services to residents and visitors. And then I'd like to thank everybody that participated in developing the budget, all the department heads, and other employees in the finance department. So with that, I don't know if there's any questions that anyone may have about anything on the budget.
Questions, anyone?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. We do have a public hearing scheduled for the
June 10th
at 6 o'clock here for public comment on the budget, and then the budget will be adopted at our June regular scheduled June meeting. Just a couple comments. Carolina Beach is going up about 9% also, the same percentage. And then I think the city of Wilmington doing like 7%. And the reasons are the same. It's just the cost of doing business and retaining and taking care of our employees. We did make a sizable commitment last year with our classification study, and I think it's paying dividends. So appreciate the good work, Arlen, and the rest of the staff on this. Any questions, anybody else? Okay. All right. Thank you, Arlen. The next item on the agenda, 10.2, is to schedule a special meeting to hold department head evaluations on Monday, June 17th. That's the day of our regular June meeting. Mm-hmm. We'll just start at noon that day. Mandy, we need a motion for that?
Yes, please.
Okay, so I'll entertain a motion to...
I'll make a motion that we hold a special meeting on June the 17th of 2024, starting at noon, to discuss the department head evaluations.
Okay.
Second.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. And for the folks here, the staff, the department heads are evaluated, their performance evaluation on an annual basis, but where they do their employees, we do the department heads. So we do that in closed session to discuss with them their past year and any future plans they have. So it's a long afternoon, but it's a good afternoon. Okay. 10.3, civil citations fee schedule amendments.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Attorney.
More than you want to know. I believe you all have a hard copy with some black lines and some red lining on it. Mm-hmm. Let me make a few comments here in the beginning. The document itself, the purpose of this item, we could get through pretty quickly. But I want to make sure that you all understand some things about enforcement because it'll guide your decision. First of all, two-step process. We're going to discuss and you all will instruct staff tonight. Then next month we'll bring back text amendments reflecting those instructions. We'll also, for those civil penalties that we implement based on that process will be reflected with changes to the fee schedule as well, which we've been through once before. But what we've got right here is a situation where the code says you can issue a civil penalty for a violation as set forth in the code, but we have several instances of violations that call for a civil penalty, but they don't indicate how much that penalty is. And the way this works is the code has to do that. Couple of housekeeping notes. We're going to do KVC 10 traffic and motor vehicles later. That was too big to include in this. There's also several instances in the code that where an action is deemed unlawful, but there's no criminal enforcement provision, there's no civil penalty provision. A lot of those are connected to development approvals and permits, and there are other remedies in those areas that we can rely on. But the bottom line is I didn't deal with those several unlawful references. I just stuck to where penalties were provided for but not specified in the amount thereof. And then finally, this is the way it works. We're dealing with two statutes here. First one's pretty easy, GS 14.4. It basically reads that if you violate a town ordinance, you're guilty of a class 3 misdemeanor, and you shall be fined no more than $500. However, no fine shall exceed $50 unless the ordinance expressly states that the fine is greater than $50. So the bottom line, if we have criminal enforcement, it's a grade 3 misdemeanor, but grade 3 misdemeanor, and it's a $50 fine unless the ordinance calls for a higher fine up to $500. You don't have to specify the 50, but if you go beyond 50, you have to specify the higher amount. And you'll notice throughout, we dealt with that the last go around by simply referring to criminal enforcement being a misdemeanor as provided for in GS 14-4. There are a couple of exceptions where we've increased the fine, like jumping off the fishing pier, for example, but they're adequate, they've been covered. The tricky provision regarding enforcement of ordinances is 168-175, and this is instructive for the work that I've done and that we'll be looking at tonight. Two key components. First of all, 168-175 provides a big toolbox of remedies.
A lot of those tools are civil litigation related. I can go get an injunction, I can get an order of abatement for a public nuisance, I can do things like that. But it also provides for civil penalties, and it also provides for criminal enforcement, but there's some little wrinkles regarding those last two. For example, an ordinance may, violating a town ordinance may be a misdemeanor only if the city specifies such in the ordinance. So if we have criminal enforcement, a la 14-4, we've got to make sure the provision states that. And the other tricky part of that is, based on a recent amendment, probably 2021, General Assembly enumerated a list of 10 different types of ordinances which cannot be criminally enforced. And pertaining to the one that interests us the most is planning and development regulations under Chapter 160D. If we have a violation of a 160D planning and development regulation, we cannot enforce that criminally unless, again, based on the statute, unless you're dealing with an unsafe building, which is sort of minimum housing code. So, with those things in mind, if you can turn to the document that I prepared, on page one, this is why we're here, 108020. Any such violation will subject the offender to a civil penalty in such an amount as set out in the code. So if you jump down to number one, for example, KBC 5.02.020.D, drinking open containers of alcohol on public streets, etc. I've quoted the provision, any person violating the provisions of this section shall be subject to a civil citation as set forth in that first provision we looked at, but it doesn't specify the amount. So the council can reach a consensus and instruct me on what the civil penalty ought to be for that particular violation, and we'll take that back and work up an amendment for next one.
Do we know what other communities do?
No, and I think a safe bet is in what we normally refer, what is normally provided for throughout the code, except for egregious situations, is $25. So I think a span of 25 or 50 would be, and police chief might want to weigh in on this as well, but that would seem to me to be SOP for something like this.
Jim, I'm just a little confused. I thought you said that if it wasn't specified, it was a minimum 50?
That's for criminal.
For this criminal, I'm sorry. Okay, yeah.
Chief, do you have any input?
I'm good with 25. I think that's what Carolina Beaches is.
So we have a consensus on
25.
Yeah, 25, yeah.
All right, the next one, and Councilman Hagler, you might have to help me on this one. This came up under the Universal Stormwater Ordinance.
Right.
It reads that a violation of this section may subject a violator to a civil penalty, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
Which may be assessed up to the full amount of the penalty to which the town is subject for. So the way I read that is there's no civil penalty unless the town is fined, and the civil penalty is then equal to what the town's liability is. But that's just my reading of it. Councilman Hagler may be more familiar with it.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think we could cite people for violations of stormwater. So if they blocked a stormwater drain, or if they are directing, like, their washing machine to a stormwater system.
Or draining on something.
Or draining, yeah. So, I think there should be a penalty. I don't know what the recommendation. I mean, Jimmy, have you got any thoughts on that? Because it would be us citing it. It'd be you citing it.
Right.
As a stormwater administrator.
Keep in mind, sorry. Keep in mind that each day is a continuing violation. So even if you go with something like 50,
that's
it
right.
takes them 5 days to do it. It's 250.
That's right. And I think that's reasonable. I mean, it doesn't Normally, we would work to get someone to correct it, but if they didn't, we should have some penalty for it.
You've always got that provision. You know, what I typically see, unless, again, it's egregious, is a notice of violation, fix it within 30 days or else, and then the second go-around is a civil penalty, right. Number one.
I'm fine with $50. You think 50?
I mean, I don't have a clue. If
I think it is. I
mean,
that's what I would recommend.
So $50, and then if they don't correct it, it jumps to...
It's daily until they do correct it, is
okay.
How...
Okay.
I understood what you said, right, sir?
Yes.
Okay.
And I don't think, unless council directs otherwise, for the two that we've looked at already, I don't think we need... it's probably something under the criminal code for drinking in open containers, so I don't think we need to worry about that. But I would suspect you don't want criminal enforcement under the one we're looking at right now, stormwater.
No.
The next one is just kind of reference to Arlen. I'm working with Arlen to try to get these things on the fee schedule before you all adopt them with the budget. And according to Joe Barlock, the civil penalty that the code provides for regarding collection containers is $50. I didn't bother to look at what that's for. I don't have a problem with the code in this instance. But according to Mr. Barlock, that needs to be added to the fee schedule. So I just made a note of that.
Yes, sir.
Number 4, 8.02.070, nuisance civil penalty versus a noise civil penalty. I just want to make sure council is aware of agrees with the discrepancy that's set forth in front of you. You can have a pretty serious public nuisance, and the civil penalty for that is 25. If you violate the noise ordinance, it's 250. If you are comfortable with that, I'm not suggesting one way or another. Just want to point out that difference and see if council had any changes it wanted to make to that. If not, we can proceed.
So what would be a nuisance?
Nuisance is a lot of different things. You know, the obvious one is failure to cut your grass, you know, high weeds and stuff like that. But our code enumerates other examples of nuisances which are pretty typical for municipal ordinances. But it also includes graffiti, light pollution, maybe, and noise. I think we drafted noise, but we've got a nuisance. Mandy, do me a favor. Can you pull up?
It's up.
Do we have the enumerator? Let's scroll down a little bit, or scroll up a little bit. These are the nuisances in addition to light pollution and graffiti. The uncontrolled growth of weeds or grass, any accumulation of waste animal or vegetable material, any accumulation of rubbish, which is usually, and you think of 205 Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
205 Alabama was a public nuisance from top to bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Any accumulation of trash seen from the street, any accumulation of demolition debris, any accumulation of junk vehicles, boats, dog houses, any condition detrimental to the public health. And again, in addition to those, and in that same article, you've got graffiti violation. Graffiti is enumerated as a nuisance, and light pollution is enumerated as a nuisance. All those are, below all of those is the one penalty provision that attributes a $25 civil penalty for each of all those. So if you want to leave it as it is.
And is that per day if they want to?
Yeah, they're all like that.
Yeah, all per day. Okay. I mean, the noise violation happened in the 70s, and the reason it was so high is because people were tired of people keeping them up at midnight. So that's how it got there,
James,
or the late 80s.
And the holding company.
Well, whoever, right? And so, I mean, from my perspective, I don't know how the police is, but... My question would be, can the police choose nuisance over noise if someone isn't egregious, but then leave the noise ordinance where it is so that if someone is really a problem to their neighbors, the police can address it.
Well, I think, and Chief can correct me if I'm wrong, but typically the nuisances are handled by the code enforcement officer.
Okay. So if you went to a noise issue, it's shut up or $250? Is that how it works? Perfect. I'm fine with that. I don't know what the rest of the
does that work most of the time?
Most of the time, we've had to arrest, back in the day, we've had to arrest somebody.
That's fine to leave noise where it is. Did you want to leave nuisances where it is?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I don't think we've had big problems with that. And it's a daily thing, so people will eventually get there.
Yes, true. Fire nuisance, that one's a little complicated. You got three different sections. 8.06.010 does provide a civil penalty for $50 for false alarms. The next provision, .020, does not provide civil or criminal enforcement for obstructing hydrants. And then the next one, 030, enumerates additional prohibitions or violations, but does not set forth any civil penalty, but does provide for criminal enforcement, but only for that section. So what I'm recommending is, let's add a new section. Delete the civil penalty for false alarms. Delete the criminal enforcement provisions in the last section, 030, and add a new section, 040, applicable to the entire article that provides a civil penalty of 50 for the first violation and misdemeanor enforcement for the second violation.
So when you say delete the false alarm civil penalty, will it still be in 806? That is an issue.
Right now, we've got three sections of 806. One's got civil penalty, one's got nothing, one's got civil and criminal, but only for the purposes of that section alone.
Right.
What I'm suggesting is we add a final section that provides 50 civil for everything above it.
Okay, including false alarm.
Yes.
Perfect.
Perfect.
And misdemeanor for second violations for everything above it. Okay?
I'm good with that.
That's good.
Next one, number six, towards the bottom of page two. Online code is 100 for violation of dog regulations. Fee schedule is 75. Just curious which one you want for both.
Which way did we change that, Lieutenant Bailey, during COVID?
We upped it to 100 somewhere.
We did? Online. I mean, I think that's the one we want to end up in. So wherever we change it.
Fee schedule should be 100.
Yeah, let's do,
As I mentioned, we'll do KBC 10 another day, and I'm working with the police department on that. Page three, enforcement of development approvals. Development approvals, you think of building permit as the best example. And I'll tell you a little story about where I'm coming from on this, and this is purely my suggestion, and you all can, council will do what it deems best. I was in a situation with the town one time that did not have, because it was a red button issue, they declined to provide for sufficient tree protection measures. The other thing wrong with their code was they had a stop work order provision, but there wasn't any teeth to it. And one Saturday on an approved subdivision development, the crew went in there and cut down about 15 or 20 live oaks. They weren't majestic, but they weren't saplings either. And it was very, very tragic, and the net result of the enforcement action against them was under the weak tree regulations that they had, they simply had to replace 15 trees, 15 saplings. So you lost some really good, potentially heritage trees, and what they got was a slap on the wrist. Violation of a development approval. can be remedied through civil litigation. You can go get an injunction to stop them from cutting down those trees. You can go get an order of abatement to clean up a public nuisance. Those you're talking about an absolute optimum minimum 30 days to get that kind of result, and more likely months to get that kind of result. So my comment is that the violation in that live oak situation was they were proceeding under a building permit. So my comment is those kind of violations can be egregious, but the remedies that would fit under 168-175 don't offer exigent relief, which is what you need. Hence, I've come up with these suggestions of putting some teeth in the enforcement of a violation of a development approval of 250 for each day that violation continues, and 750 if you violate a stop work order. Trying to figure out some way to have a deterrent effect that stops something like what happened in the story that I provided, in the illustration that I provided. So I'll let you instruct me on how you want to proceed on that. I think a developer coming in on a big project, $500, slap on the wrist, but 750 is going to get their attention, I think, and if they don't stop that work after receiving a stop work order, then that 750 would continue day by day. So I think that kind of provision does get their attention. Likewise, a building permit 250, I think, is significant for a homeowner, but again, if that violation continues, that's daily, and I think that's going to get their attention. So I'm trying to come up with a mechanism based on the experience that I have that has a deterrent effect, hence these recommendations.
Comments, anybody?
I agree with his thought process.
I do too.
I'm certainly approving what he's recommending on that.
You all good with that?
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And let's see, top of page 4, conditions of permit for obstructing a street. That's where somebody gets a permit to do some work that involves the right-of-way, that ends up impacting the right-of-way. Any violation of this section shall subject, I need the amount of the civil penalty. Again, 25 or 50 seems to fit.
I think that's sufficient as well. That's not a big issue, Chief.
I don't think it's ever come.
Is it really? We have lawn care guys and stuff, but they move on when we tell. That's 425. If you got.
I mean, that's most time. That's going to be somebody unloading something or setting some trusses or something like that, and they do a pretty good job.
I don't think we've got a current problem, but we need to tie that loose end up in case we do. 25 would seem appropriate.
That's fine with me. Yep.
So the rest of the board, council, on consensus with that?
Sure.
One thing. Mm-hmm. Would it make more sense for us to be more consistent? I mean, 25 or 50 is not a huge difference. Correct. Do we want to be consistent through any of these things?
Well, you've got... I mean,
going above, obviously, for something that's egregious, but for these sort of deterrents, minimum deterrents, do we want to?
You've got, in the current fee schedule, civil citation fees. And Arlen, I want to change that to civil penalty fees when we get around to but you got 50, 50, 25, 50, 75, 50, 35, 25, 50, so... I don't think, unless you change all those, you don't have any consistency.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. 25 is fine.
The next one is related, still in the obstructions or encroachments on streets or sidewalks. And reading down about 4 or 5 lines, any person refusing or failing to remove such obstruction within 10 days after notice from the town shall be subject to a civil penalty for each day again, 25 would seem to fit.
Would that be what we would get into? You know, we grant people the ability to build structures in our.
Well, that one, they have an agreement with us, and if they don't move it when we tell them to, we're going to move it, and they're charging for it. So
re-nourishment area, that's all covered by another part of the
country. Yeah, I'm thinking about when we issue for in this where the easement is back here for the fourth main sewer behind the homes. But we do, you're right,
we have a legal agreement. Document with them, so
yeah,
this is for just someone
just in the
in an easement anywhere.
This is more right of way related.
Okay. That's right.
Under right of way provision. 25?
Yeah, 25.
And the same with the next one.
I'm trying to remember, I think that's the same one, same code provision. I think we're still in streets and right of ways. Mm-hmm. And it simply provides for, I think that's 25 again.
Is there
I'm fine.
Next one, water drained from a swimming pool. The section 3.04.050 sets forth two violations. One is set forth in A, one is set forth in B. The violation C is where we need to come up with the amount of the civil penalty. And again, this gets back to something we talked about with stormwater, but it's related to swimming pools draining the water in an improper way. 25 again seems appropriate to me.
I support that as well.
Yeah.
And then on the last page.
David, I'm going to talk to you about that sometime off. About this
sec, yeah. Okay.
This is subdivision regulation. And you've got subdivision regulations are interesting because if you go about subdividing without getting a recorded plat, et cetera, that provided by general statute is criminally enforced. But we've also got, in this particular one, violators of subdivision regulations. I'm reading at the bottom of the quoted section there. Violators of this chapter shall be subject to a fine and or imprisonment provided by 14-4. In addition, pursuant to 168-175, violations of this chapter is supposed to subject the offender to the civil penalty of. And this, if you read to the top, this concerns any person being the owner, yada, 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 of land located within the town, yada, 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 that subdivides his land in violation of this chapter, or sells land by reference to a plat showing a subdivision before that plat was properly approved. And if you think back to plat approval, basically you've got a checklist of things that have to be, so you got two issues. One seems to be taken care of by the fact that council, I think it's council in this town, approves subdivision plats. And when you look at the code, a subdivision plat has to have a checklist of A through Z. If they meet that checklist, they get approved. So I don't really see too many instances, if any, where somebody's going to violate the subdivision regs except for trying to subdivide land without having a plat. I think if they got a plat and they got to go through the checklist, it's going to be hard to see how they violate that because they don't get approved unless they meet the checklist. Nonetheless, you got a provision at the current time that provides for a civil penalty as well as criminal enforcement if you violate the subdivision regs. And I can think of situations where that would be appropriate. It could be, for example, if you've got a plat that's approved and on the condition that they do checklist item D, E, and F, and they don't do those, you've got other remedies available to you, but that could also be a situation where a civil penalty would be appropriate. I don't think 25, 50, if you went that way, I think it's more like 50 to 100 is what I would say.
Slow use, but I support $50.
I know.
$50 is fine.
I mean, I don't.
50?
Yep. I mean, I guess. Yep. I'll go off of your recommendation, Jim.
That's it for me, unless anybody's got any questions on that. I appreciate it. We'll bring back the...
You're going to bring it back to us next month? And
I'm going to go change all those provisions, and you'll have that on next month's agenda. You might, because it's going to result in fee schedule changes, you might want that item before you get to the budget.
Okay.
On the agenda. Thank you.
Yeah. We'll need that. We'll need that and adopt it. So he'll... Okay. Thank you, Jim.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Next item, mayor updates. I really don't have anything other than parking season seems to be going well. We're ahead of schedule, revenue wise from last year, and as we can all tell, the traffic is picking up. So that's going to continue. And thank you for department heads on everything y'all have done on the budget this year. It has not been a I think we all have given it a lot of thought, and it's not easy when we have to raise taxes. And that's all I have. Dennis, you have anything?
No, nothing for me.
David?
So we did the two hurricane information sessions last week. They were attended about as normal, so 14 and 12 people. Request permission from council to send out the annual letter this week. I'll work with Mandy to get that sent out, and then hurricane season starts January 1st, or June 1st.
It'll be posted on our website. And all
yeah,
that
it's, stuff. They're posted on the website and everything. Yep, okay. Yes, sir.
John, anything? No. Connie?
Yeah.
All right. We have a closed session tonight, so I'll entertain a motion if someone would.
I'll make a motion that we go into closed session for a personnel issue per the North Carolina General Statutes 143-318.11. Subparagraph A and 6.
Second.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you, everybody. Okay, I'll entertain a motion to come into open session.
I'll make a motion that we come back into open session.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Attorney, will you review it?
We had a closed session on a personnel matter. No votes were taken. No action were taken by council.
I entertain a motion for adjournment.
Make a motion.
So moved.
Adjourn.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.